Yo, everyone, welcome back. Brand new Techish in the building. New episode. It's Michael Behane, and I'm with
Abadesi.
Abadesi. Yeah, so you know what? Our Patreon audience got to hear us talk about a bit about Riri and
Riri.
All that she was going through. It was a bit of bad news, actually. So it looked like one of her brand lines, the fashion line, had shut down. But in the meantime, apparently Savage Fenty, which is basically the lingerie line, I'm gonna need you to take over on this because you're much more an expert. This thing,
lies.
They raised $150 million Series B.
Unicorn Club.
Yeah, so the valuation is now $1 billion.
Damn.
It's actually quite a confusing structure. So there are like three or four different brands that she works on, and they're all partnered with LVMH. I almost said that right. And so they shut down the fashion one, which is called Fenty Maison, I think that's what it's called, if I pronounced that right. But there's still Fenty Beauty, Fenty Skin, and Savage Fenty, which is the lingerie line. So shout out to her, man. $1 billion valuation is nothing to think.
That's
incredible. Interesting because like we posted this on Pocket, and like some people were like, oh, she only owns like 15% of the company, and Kylie Jenner owned like 50% when she sold hers, and all kinds of stuff. Like, what's your thoughts on that, on the different ownership structures, like maintaining ownership?
It's crazy because like I feel like Rihanna has such a huge platform, right, in terms of the actual like audience. But then at the same time, it's like fashion, whilst being a profitable industry, does require so many complex things. I mean, I just remember like as a very small example, once like working with some founder friends on a sprint, we were exploring like ethical and socially conscious tampons. We didn't end up moving forward with the idea, obviously, otherwise you'd heard about it. But even just in that small little process of researching like suppliers, manufacturers, shipping, I started to realize how complex this can be. So I totally understand the advantage for her to go in with an existing organization. I think for me, what's most interesting about this is actually like an indication of how society has changed in terms of our attitudes towards beauty and our attitudes towards sexiness and what it even means to be a woman. Because if we think of all of the branding and campaigns and even the iconic fashion shows that Rihanna and this brand have created, it's like challenged all of the status quo around this market. There's like the Victoria's Secret shows, and like the Victoria's Secret models are the kind of almost like echoes of the past, so homogenous in what they represent.
Skinny white, basically.
Yeah. And also just like so one dimensional in this idea of beauty, kind of like, you know, like the Barbie doll, this like actually anatomically impossible version of beauty. And then Rihanna comes in, 21st century, 2020 vibes. She's got all sorts of gender identities, all sorts of body shapes. It's so inclusive from day one. And that's what her campaigns to me like represent, like how society has shifted. And it's one of those things where it's almost like just catching onto a tidal wave that's growing and growing. And I think that's why she does so well. And like, I remember seeing some of the first Instagram ads. The price point is so incredibly compelling and competitive. Like, how can you not buy it? Literally, like there would be Rihanna looking sexy AF in like, oh, 2 for $20. I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'll buy that.
That's a checkout.
Literally, that's like less than a friggin' pizza. So it's so clever, and I'm so glad to see it growing. And what's also really interesting, I think, is to think about the timing of this, right? Because what are the clothes that you wear the most when you have literally nowhere to go? It's your basics, right? It's your basics and your comfy stuff and your loungewear. And when you want to feel a little extra special, you wear your fanciest basics and your fanciest loungewear. We've just had Valentine's Day, one of the most like famous days for consumers to go out and buy lingerie and buy underwear. So I think this Series B is just like totally deserved, totally on point. It'll be exciting to see this brand keep growing.
Yeah, so it's I think they made $150 million in revenue in 2020. So it's about a 10x on top of the line sales. So that's, I mean, in this world, that's pretty reasonable. Like 10x on sales, like it's actually like in tech, that's actually like a small valuation, right? And so more power to them. Some of the things that I found super interesting is that, so apparently Victoria's Secret's been on the decline since 2016, apparently, like they've kind of just been slipping. And one of the things that they got criticized for was that their campaigns were overly sexualized. And then in the article that I read about this whole thing was that they were like, so how is it that Savage Fenty is able to kind of draw that, walk that line and get away with it? And they were basically saying that there's a difference between being sex positive and just basically catering to the male gaze kind of thing, right? And that's the kind of distinction that they've managed to make and walk the line. The other thing that I found was super interesting. This is how I know I'm a business nerd, because I actually get turned on by like business strategy. That's really smart. Like, so they
partnered
with
Valentine's gift to yourself.
That's my Valentine's gift, like, just like business strategy 101 book from Amazon. And so they partnered with Amazon, and a lot of like fashion brands have been super hesitant to partner with Amazon because Amazon is notorious for just ripping you off, like looking at your product, seeing what works, looking at all the data, making a cheap knockoff version. So what they did is, and what Savage Fenty, yeah, exactly. So what Savage Fenty did is they only put a limited amount of product on there, number one. And number two, they realized that actually that you can't replicate Rihanna. Do you see what I'm saying? Like if I'm like, for example, Away, like a luggage brand, Away. If someone cloned Away and did it half price, I'm buying the clone, bro. Like there's nothing about the Away brand that is keeping me so like enamored with that product that I have to get it if both products are like with like. But I'm not buying, or I would assume most women are not going to buy Savage Benty. You know what I'm saying? Savage 10. Yes. You're not buying the fake version of it. You want what Riri is selling to you. Even if it's already at affordable price, you're still not going to want it at a cheaper price if it's not the real thing. And then also the link up with Amazon means that they can always do their fashion shows on Amazon Prime. So all around, it's just really clever. Like I love the kind of the tie-in. They've still got their own website. They've still got their own data. They've still got their own larger range on their own website. But I think all around, I just got to commend the business strategy. And that's the kind of stuff that I love to see, man. So I'm really here for it. Shout out to Riri. That's
clever. Smart.
Yeah, man. So we got to talk about it. BTC, 50K.
Oh, you know,
Abadesi is now a millionaire. It went from 900K last week to now $1 million. Your portfolio on Coinbase is now looking strong. But I mean, you never know. Abba wouldn't tell me.
You
know what I'm saying?
You just see me not show up. You just see me not show up for recording. It's like, Abba, where'd she go? Speaking of which, we need to like at that tail of this segment, talk about black owned crypto wallets, because this is like a serious space that our listeners need to get into. But anyway, let's talk about Bitcoin. And do you know what I want to laugh at? The fact that whatever, was it Christmas 2018 when Bitcoin hit like 15K and people were like, oh, what? Bitcoin's hit 15K. What is this? This is mad. Okay, fine. It did crash, but it's still crazy to think that like 2-3 years later, it's now more than 3x'd what we thought was a ridiculous amount of money.
So I found this really great article from 2018 that the New York Times ran, and it basically was called "Everyone is getting hilariously rich and you're not." And this was after Bitcoin went from $800 to $20,000 in the space of 1 year. At that time, we were like, oh my Lord, it's unbelievable. It then crashed back down to $3,000. So if you had bought at the bottom, you know what I'm saying? If you had just said, listen, now I'm going all in, you have made an absolute killing. But it's something, because I do remember that bubble. I was very intensely engaged in that bubble and I made money and I lost money. that's all I'm going to say, right? There is something about watching people around you get rich quickly that just triggers something in people and makes the bubble just inflate and inflate and inflate. And yeah, I got a great quote here from Charlie Munger. Basically, it's not greed that drives the world, it's envy. Like you don't have, if you're earning like 100K a year, if you're earning 100K a year, but all of your homies are earning like 70K a year, you're not gonna say it out loud, but you're gonna be feeling pretty good about yourself. But if all your homies are earning 200K a year and you're earning 100K a year, your lifestyle hasn't changed. Materially, you're still the same, but you're gonna feel some type of way about it. And really is not greed, but envy that does drive the world. People looking around to the left and right of them thinking, who's getting ahead of me when I should be there? And that's how these bubbles stay inflated. I'm not saying Bitcoin is a bubble. You know what I'm saying? If you're still invested, it might be, but who knows? Bubble or not? What's your thoughts on what I said about envy being a massive thing, a massive driving force in economic activity?
Oh, man. It's so funny because...
Who are you envious of?
I'm jealous of you, Michael. You're getting more airtime than me. No, I'm joking. I was looking on my bookshelf yesterday and I saw that I had this like copy of Hobbes' Leviathan. Like, have you ever read that? And it's like his smart view of the world. I had to read at university. I didn't choose to read it. his view of the world, you know, he was writing like, I didn't even know when, like 1600, 17th century. But his view of the world was that without structure and systems, and basically is like an authoritarian, like a Leviathan, like in his mind, it was this kind of like all encompassing thing. Everyone just resorts to a state of nature because of this finite resource problem, which is at the heart of all the economic problems, right? We have like a finite amount of resources and infinite wants and infinite needs. And I think you're right. Charlie Munger is right. It isn't greed. It's not wanting more in and of itself. It's wanting more than what others have. that
that are around you.
A lot of our decisions and behavior. And I think that is absolutely where that keeping up with the Joneses mentality comes from, where that saying comes from. And if you look at how certain brands have advertised to us over the last few decades, that's even what they're getting at, you know, like, oh, do you want to be the coolest person, right? That's based on a presumption that, like, you're either the one doing the envying or you're the one being envied. So which do you want to be?
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful. And like, I've been doing a lot of reading recently for my mental health, just around like compassion and self-compassion and practicing gratitude. And one of the things that I read that relates exactly to this quote is this idea of like, you think like a lot of our unhappiness comes from thinking others are happier than ourselves. And that's very rarely the case. So yeah, I would agree.
And that's why Instagram is the devil.
Yeah, exactly. So I would 100% agree that like a lot of the times our motivations for doing things are not actually self-driven, but rather in pursuit of being more like someone else, whether that's richer than them or something else, and anything else. I think that's really funny. But what I don't agree with is, you know, when we were talking earlier and like going through the show notes, you were pointing out economists like Nouriel Roubini saying Bitcoin and all other cryptos have no intrinsic value. Okay, well, that's kind of like saying money has no intrinsic value, right? If I give you a $100 bill, like that piece of paper is a representation of value. And we've talked about this before when we were talking about Sapiens and the chapter that Yuval Harari goes into on like money and all that kind of stuff. So I think like statements like that sometimes to me just feel a bit flippant, because it's like, well, okay, it might not have an intrinsic value, but there's still an important conversation to be had about what crypto represents. And I think the point you made last week was really interesting around this idea of like, are people losing faith in their currency? Right? Whether that's the dollar and deciding to invest in a cryptocurrency. And I still think there's like a really important conversation for us to continue having around the role that blockchain will play in the future of commerce. So let's talk about black owned crypto wallets, because I'm trying to get in on this. I'm trying to ride this train for the long term.
I don't know anything about this.
I don't know it either. What do you know about I'm asking our listeners to recommend some to us.
Because you don't want to use Coinbase, basically. Is that why?
Yeah. No, dude, my stuff's just been sitting there with me trying to get it out since the news broke. I haven't touched it. I haven't done anything. I haven't dabbled in this market, but now I'm ready.
So,
are we buying Reebok?
If I said to you Facebook, no, not yet. we'll leave that story later. If I said to you Facebook, Facebook.com, Facebook the app, who are their biggest competitors? What would come to mind? Who would come to mind?
Sleep.
That's true.
Nature,
mental health.
Great outdoors. Yeah, exactly. Sanity. Facebook's competitors. I don't even know what. Like, it depends. Advertising. Google. Yeah, Google.
Yeah, you would say probably Google, because Google and Facebook compete on the online ad market. But basically, Zuck, I think in an internal meeting, basically came out and said that he thinks that Apple is actually one of their biggest competitors. And it's quite surprising, because you think, what does an app maker have against the manufacturer of the device, which is the role that Apple plays in the ecosystem? But essentially, Tim Cook has come out and made a lot of statements criticizing Facebook, not directly, but criticizing the kind of business model, criticizing the kind of pillaging of data that a lot of these ad platforms do, including Facebook. And Zuck's come out and said, listen, we've got to watch out, because now they are, I think in the latest iOS update, Apple will notify you if certain apps are basically trying to take your data. So you'll get a pop-up the next time you use Facebook, conceivably, and it will say, this app wants to know this about you. Do you give it permission to do so? If you say no, then Facebook does not have access to all of this data, and essentially means that their ad product is weakened and their ad product won't be able to target you as directly. So obviously Facebook is now realizing that, these guys are as essential, are a risk to our core business model. What do we do? Now, I think most of us listening are probably going to be on the side of Apple. And I am in this situation. I do think that kind of ad-based business model that Facebook and Google have done has gone too far. But it's just interesting where like the power that Apple has as the people that create the thing that we all hold in our pockets. Obviously, if you're Android, but like 20-30% of us have an iPhone globally, right? Or something like that, some number like that. And yeah, it's just interesting. What do you think? Like, what comes to mind?
I mean, it's just, you got to look at the person saying the thing, right? It's like, I just don't think you've got the user's interests at heart. It's like, seriously? Are you saying that after everything that's happened? It just feels a bit pot kettle black, if you know what I'm saying.
So you think Apple was basically a bit too guilty to be trying to present themselves as like too pure, or trying to present themselves as a good guy?
No, I'm just saying that it's just ironic that Zuck is now coming out and being like, oh my gosh, like look at Apple, like stopping us from
crushing
getting...
us. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, well, dude, like literally what have you done to like every competitor ever?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hey, Snapchat, remember those guys? Like, anyway, yeah. So a part of me is just like, karma's a bitch. That's why we love her. The second thing I think is, I don't think the threat is as big as he makes it out to be. Like, this to me just shows his monopoly mindset so much. Mm-hmm. Globally, more Android users than Apple users.
Yeah, but who has the money? Let's keep it 100% real right now, yeah?
But it's about the attention. Go.
Who advertisers want the attention of people that are willing to spend? And most people that are in the higher net worth areas, there's a higher density of iOS. I'm not even saying this just to be like bougie because I've got an iPhone. I just mean literally it's born out in the data that people that generally speaking have iPhones are more likely to spend, have higher income, have higher net worth, right? That doesn't mean it's just as an average. Obviously, there's gonna be some baller who's on Android saying, no man, I'm a millionaire.
Yeah, and exactly.
I got a Google phone, like good for you, bro. But
Bill
I'm just
Gates
saying
starts DMing us.
Yeah, basically.
But from what his I'm Hawaii. Saying,
yeah, basically. Sorry. What I'm saying is that it is a massive risk to their business, just because if you're siphoning off 20% of the largest pool of advertisement eyeballs that are desired, it's a problem to them. And the level of shade is so real from Tim Cook. Let me read a statement that Tim Cook said. The shade in this is so amazing. I aspire to this level of shade. We can no longer turn a blind eye to a theory of technology that says all engagement is good engagement. The longer, the better. And all with the goal of collecting as much data as possible, he said. Too many are still asking the question, how much can we get away with? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. A social dilemma cannot be allowed to become a social catastrophe.
And if you...
And what was, the name of that Netflix documentary?
Tim, Social Dilemma.
Yeah, man. He must have saw that documentary and was like, nah, I'm putting an end to this.
Shots fired for realsies. What can I say? First of all, is this only the Facebook app or is this all Facebook apps?
So this is WhatsApp, Instagram, essentially all apps that are trying to get privacy data from you or data that would be considered to be private will now be the user will now be notified and said, do you consent essentially?
Okay.
And that extra step obviously is going to mean a large portion of us are going to be like, hell no.
I mean, are we really? Like, Siri knows my life. She'd be hearing me. She knows what's happening. Like, okay, honest question. You've got WhatsApp. I've WhatsApped you before. Are you going to say no to this?
I think I would need to know what are the I would need to know what are the consequences to saying no. If, for example, if all of a sudden I say no, and Facebook's like, well, then you can't use WhatsApp and you can't message this amount of people and blah blah blah, then I'm gonna be like, all right, cool, you've got me, you know, by the neck. But if it's like the ads are no longer relevant, the ads are basically just complete nonsense and don't match my desires, I'm gonna be like, cool, yeah, I'm blocking you access to that data. Because to be honest, most of us don't consent. We just are unaware. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're just most the average person is just unaware, like they just don't consent. So let's watch this space and let's see how it goes. I just found it interesting that Zuckerberg was just being so obvious and being like, listen, they're coming for us and we gotta fight back. I don't know what's in Facebook's toolkit. This is the first time where I think Facebook has nothing in their armory to combat a competitor.
But
there's
unless they
make their own phone. But it's too late.
But do you think, like, given all the arguments we've made in the past on this show about the true incentives of these, you know, organizations and corporations, you know, last week we were talking about why, you know, who's Tesla accountable to, right? Mm-hmm. Is it accountable to the shareholders? We can use that same argument here, right? You're coming from the perspective that you're, you know, Team Apple, right? Team Facebook versus Team Apple. There's this kind of implicit suggestion that Facebook don't have the consumers back and Apple do have the consumers back. At the end of the day, Apple's still, you know, one of the FAANG companies. It's one of like the top companies. They are no stranger to unethical behavior in their factories in China.
Absolutely,
they're not perfect.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is Apple creating a narrative
that
isn't perfectly true or perfectly transparent?
I think they're also not acknowledging the fact that if WhatsApp goes down, iMessenger looks better, basically. So there are they do have their own services and apps in the ecosystem, and this does help them. I'm not expecting them to be acting completely altruistically. I know this is within their self-interest, right? But I do feel like there needs to be a variety in the marketplace of phones where, like, if you're just like, I don't really care about privacy and I just want a cool phone, maybe you might get an Android. But if you're like, I'm willing to pay a bit more and Apple is giving me the privacy that I want, then I'm going to go for an iPhone, right? So I think I'm just happy to see that there's going to be variety in the marketplace and alternatives that are offered to the users. And there's choice in this matter.
I hear you.
Like we've said before, like with WhatsApp and Facebook and Instagram, like to a certain extent, you're forced to be in these ecosystems just because everybody else is in these ecosystems, right? So by being forced to be part of these ecosystems, you are consenting to basically having your data pillaged. And maybe you're saying to yourself, I want a choice. I want to say in that matter. And maybe Apple's giving us a voice. I'm not saying Apple's a good guy. Like you said, that they've got many crimes that they're guilty of. But I think this is a positive step in the right direction. I'm just here for the drama as well. I want to see what Zuck's got up his armory. I want to see what he's going to do.
Apple versus Facebook. I'm so down for that.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Aha. Aha is the world's number one roadmap software. They've helped more than 5,000 companies build lovable products. They're completely self-funded, profitable, and have been entirely remote since they started in 2013. They're currently hiring a senior product manager and a senior Ruby on Rails engineer. Link is in the show notes.
So Daniel Kaluuya was recently appearing on a podcast where the presenters were asking him to respond to a quote that kind of went viral in the press. He participated in an interview, and in the interview, the interview made it out for him to say, like, oh, I didn't really think of myself as black. I just think of myself as human. Yeah. And the presenters kind of wanted to like call him out a bit on that, because they were like, okay, you know, since then you've been on like a lot of roles that are furthering the conversation around anti-racism, pro-blackness. Like, has your perspective changed on that? You know, because it kind of suggested that you see yourself as human before you're black. And this started a very interesting conversation about the way we talk about race and racism in the media that we thought it would really great to bring onto the show. So when Daniel responds to the journalist, the first thing he says is that quote was taken out of context. Classic. He says that the quote started with him saying, I love black people. So, you know, there was a lot more of his pro-black sentiment and him kind of affirming his black identity throughout the interview. And it was just like that one part of like, oh, I don't see myself as black. I see myself as human. That got, you know, pushed around and around and around because that kind of is in line with what the status quo want us to hear and what perpetuates that. But I think the thing that is like most interesting for me is the way he starts to give an example for like showing how messed up it is the way that we talk about racism. So he kind of gives this example where it's like, okay, so imagine your mom gets robbed and she calls the police and she's like, oh my gosh, I've been robbed. Help, 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 help. They pull her into the police station. First question they ask her is like, okay, so ma'am, why were you robbed? And it's like, what does she say? Does she say, oh, I was robbed because you failed me in your duties to protect me? You know, what is the answer to that? And it's like, well, you would never find yourself in that situation. Like, you would never find yourself asking the person affected by the problem why that problem is happening to them. And he says, and yet, here I am, a black actor, just trying to do my thing. An actor, above all else, who happens to be black, acting while black, trying to do my thing, trying to get my things. And again and again and again, people ask me, why racism? Why racism? And he's like, I don't know why racism. And I just think it's so incredible to have someone with his platform, again, coming through, Daniel, like pushing this social justice agenda forward, calling out the ridiculousness of like the media, like the few times you're willing to even approach the subject, you're approaching it in a way that does not allow for a productive conversation to happen. No opportunities to learn and no opportunities to acknowledge that this is a problem that ultimately is created and perpetuated by the people who
are racist.
Represent the status quo, the people from the dominant groups, the people asking the questions. And like, this to me is such a fascinating, fascinating, fascinating reflection on power. Right? Because when you have power, you can control the language, you can control the agenda, you can control the way that questions are asked. And it's just another way to maintain that power. What did you think of that clip?
Yeah, you know, so I remember seeing that quote initially back in the day. And I was just like, Daniel, man, I've been trying to defend you because like everyone's like, why are all these British actors like, you know what I'm saying, taking all these roles? And I've been like, well, you know what, man, I'm not mad at it, but I see why people are mad at it. But when I saw that quote, I was like, bro, I wipe my hands clean. What can I do? You're coming out talking that talk of like, I don't see color. Like, and I was like, I wanted to know what he really meant by that. So I'm really glad that, so Van Lathan was the guy who asked him. And Van Lathan actually was the dude that was the guy at TMZ who stepped up to Kanye and was like, yo, Kanye, man, you're tripping, basically. If you remember back in the day when Kanye was doing the rounds, right? So Van came with the hard-hitting question. He was like, yo, you're playing Fred Hampton now in this movie, which I really recommend everyone go see. I haven't seen it yet myself, but we've got to support it. It's Judas and the Black Messiah. And he was like, listen, let me clarify. That's not what I meant. I wasn't trying to say that. They were asking me questions about racism. And I was like, I'm a human being. Like, I don't know, like, why there's racism. You should be thinking to yourself, like, why is there racism? Because I'm the victim of racism, not the perpetrator of it. So how the hell am I meant to know? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is absolutely the source of this, right? So I love the clarification, and yeah, I'm happy that he clarified. I'm looking forward to watching the movie. I think it's a necessary movie as well. Like, if you don't know, Fred Hampton was the chairman of the Black Panther Party in Chicago. I'm sure most of our audience does know this, but he was essentially assassinated by the US government with help of the Chicago police. And the title of the film is Judas and the Black Messiah, because the head of the FBI, I've forgotten his name, J. Edgar Hoover, was explicit in internal documents saying we have to prevent the rise of a Black Messiah, someone who can unify the movements. So we've got to kill Malcolm. We've got to get rid of Martin. We've got to make sure there isn't anybody out there that can take all of these various different factions. And it's like today. You know, today you've got Black Lives Matter, you've got ADOS, you've got the Pan Africans, you've got, you know, all these kind of different schisms and sects of people trying to do different things, but they've got the same goal, which is the uplifting and, you know, the uplifting of Black people and the removal of injustice, but we're all trying to do it different ways. And they, at the time, they were like, we've got to make sure there's no man that can come and unify all these groups and be the quote-unquote Black Messiah. So it's just an important story. Like, I know we've always said, oh, come on, does every Black film have to be about trauma and whatever, but I feel like this shit is necessary. Because it's like, I remember actually... And I'm not comparing the situations whatsoever. And I remember when Nipsey died and there was a lot of rumors that, like, maybe he got assassinated. And a lot of people were like, oh, you lot are bugging. What are you talking about? Like, that can never happen. And I think it's a partial historical ignorance that a lot of people are not aware of how many of our leaders were actually just killed outright flagrantly by the powers that be. I'm not saying that that's what happened to Nipsey, but I'm saying that, like, we'd be less quick to dismiss this shit if we were aware of what happened. And I think specifically for white people, a lot of white people are unaware. You know, what happened to Fred Hampton? What happened to Malcolm? They just think, oh, you know, the US government, you know, they try their best. They're not the good guy. They're not always the bad guys. They try their best. It's like, no, actually, there's a lot of nefarious shit that's happened. People have been snuffed, like, legitimately.
Oh, yeah, throughout history. Oh, yeah. Those African dictators that mysteriously die in captivity and whatnot. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, shout out to Daniel. Just going back to
that.
Can
I ask you something?
Yeah, go on.
So we talked about envy being a bigger motivator than greed. And I think when we think of the Black Messiah and, you know, this conversation we're having about J. Edgar Hoover and the work that the FBI did to, like, infiltrate the Black Panthers, there are so many undercover agents in the Black Panthers, so many of, like, the violent attacks against the US that the Black Panthers were put on trial for turned out to be the machinations of the actual undercover agents within the Black Panther. I mean, it's so wild and hard to believe, yet that is our history and that is our truth. Do you think that the fear that permeated, you know, J. Edgar Hoover's mind, the organization, the way he operated, came from knowing the power that they have and then ultimately fearing what would happen if that transfer of power went into the Black community? Because it's almost like then they have to be envious of Black people.
I think, I'm not sure on the question, but I think just to expound on what,
like,
you're saying.
Like, that link between envy and fear, like, envy, we envy power. Mm. We envy people with more power than us and people with more privilege than us. And it's almost like acknowledging that if let's say a Black Messiah comes around and liberates the mindset of oppressed Black people, mm-hmm. and makes them realize that they can have power and, you know, makes them fight for it in whatever way they feel right to do that, then what happens? Then that leaves the former dominant groups in an inferior position and makes them envious of the new folks at the top.
I wouldn't say it's envy. I would say it's fear based on an understanding that, you know, their position wasn't legitimate, right? I think, you know, in terms of, like, the total amount due for reparations in the US and then globally, it's in the trillions, you know, in terms of that total value. So anybody who is seen as being able to get Black people an equitable stake is a threat to the status quo. And people don't want the status quo change because the status quo serves them. And they see what happened in countries where there were movements that overthrew illegitimate governments. And J. Edgar Hoover was aware of, we can't let this happen in the mainland. You know, they were aware that, you know, I think a lot of people think that governments in Europe and the US are just so stable that no one could overthrow them. And I'm not saying this is what I want. I just mean in the sense that we look at what happens in Africa and South America and in the global South in general, where governments are toppled and overthrown and new systems are put in place, not necessarily always for the best. And we think that can't ever happen here. But people like J. Edgar Hoover are just like, we've just got to snuff it. You know, any kind of semblance of any kind of revolution or any kind of change.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's envy. I think it's just fear based on not wanting change, fear on realizing someone with the right voice and the right kind of charisma can make a lot of people wake up and realize that, hold on, shit ain't right. But yeah, I haven't seen the movie. I can't wait to watch it. I'm looking forward to seeing it, man. Yo, it's reviews time. I want to read a review that actually had me scared in the beginning. It starts off with, I'm very upset. I was like, oh no, what have I said? What have we done? I'm very upset because no one told me about Tekish podcast sooner. LOL, this podcast literally brightens up my day. It's my favorite thing to listen to when I'm on the move. I love how Michael and Abadesi keep me informed and entertained. Much love to you both.
Oh, heart emoji. Thanks. Much love to you back. Heart emojis.
From Mary X Show. Yay. Shout out to you. But yeah, that's the end of the episode. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate that. Leave a review if you want to get read out on the show.
Yes.
And sub to our Patreon if you want to get some extra ish. We've been putting some snippets on the main timeline, but if you want the whole thing, you got to sub.
Are you on Instagram?
And if you're on
Instagram,
yeah,
follow us. At Tekish Pod. I'll see you there.
All right. Peace. Ciao. Bye-bye.